The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. Good evening again. Yeah, I find myself smiling. It's quite something. I feel happy thinking about, even though I'm here by myself, I don't know, I feel happy about exploring, sharing the Dharma in a way that's meaningful for me, and to imagine that it might be supportive and helpful for others, in whatever way it might be. So welcome, welcome for being here. Some of the names here I recognize, so it's nice seeing you all. Maybe seeing your names rather than seeing you literally. And tonight I wanted to talk a little bit about, I alluded to this during the guided meditation, a few things. One is, how do we respond to difficulties? Because this clearly can be a benefit of meditation practice, is to support us in when difficulties arise. Just in case there happens to be a pandemic, just in case there happens to be really awful racial injustice, just in case there happens to be some economic uncertainty, it's good to have a practice that can support us and help us. So the Buddha, of course, had some teachings on how this might help not only some of these difficulties that I described that are from our greater environment, but some of the difficulties that we might experience more personally, like how we respond when our buttons get pushed, so to speak, or someone does something or they say something that really gets under our skin. And so our practice is preparing us to be with these challenges. It doesn't make them go away. It just helps us to respond in a skillful way. That's not the only thing that practice is about, and it's not the only benefit, if I say that word. It's not the only consequence of having a meditation practice. But it certainly is a outcome or something that to make a difference in the way our life unfolds, our daily life unfolds, is to help prepare us for or give us resources for when difficulties arise. And some of the ways in which the Buddha talked about this or taught about this is he gave some stories. And some of the stories are a little bit outrageous or, you know, exaggerated, or at least for our ears and 2020 in California. I don't know how it landed on the people at the time of the Buddha, of course. But some of these stories, maybe because they're a little bit outrageous, are memorable. And so I'd like to share some of them and to tie it together with this idea of how our practice can support us during difficulties. So some of you might be familiar with these stories. One is the story of Kali, who is a maid, and Videhika. She's sometimes translated as a housewife, so somebody who runs the household, her household. And this housewife, Videhika, she has a good reputation. She's sweet, even-tempered, and calm. And Kali, the maid, so somebody who worked in the household, was skilled and tireless and was well organized in her work. And Kali, the maid, she thought, you know, my boss, my mistress has a good reputation, but does she actually have anger in her and just not show it? That is, am I just helping to create all the perfect conditions so that she never has to show any anger? Is it just because she has all of us that are running this household, working here, that are putting things just so? But when things aren't just so, How is I have in my mind Mistress Videyaka. Mistress is the word that gets translated as to show somebody who runs a household, a woman who runs a household. So Kali, the mate, has this idea, I'm going to test her. I'm going to test Videyaka. So she woke up late the next day. And then Videyaka said to her, "Hey, Kali." I don't know how the intonation was. Of course, I'll say that another translator says, "What the hell, Kali?" Which I found a little surprising. But, you know, this exasperation. Like, "Hey, Kali." "Yes, ma'am." "What is the matter that you got up so late?" "Nothing, ma'am." "Nothing is the matter, you wicked girl, yet you get up so late." And angry and upset, Mistress Videyaka scowled. So she made this look on her face. She clearly was not pleased. And then Kali thought, "Oh, my mistress actually has anger in her and just hasn't shown it. It is just because my work is neat that she doesn't show any anger, though it is actually present in her." So she had this good reputation, right, as being somebody who was calm and even-tempered. But then the maid gets this inkling, well, maybe she's not quite so calm and even-tempered. So then Kali thought, maybe I'll just wake up even later tomorrow. So she does this, and Videyaka says, "Hey, Kali." "Yes, ma'am." "What is the matter that you get up so late?" "Nothing, ma'am." "Nothing is the matter, you wicked girl, yet you get up so late." So angry and upset, Mistress Videyaka blurted out angry words. So, excuse me, I have to... Yeah, sometimes when I speak, I don't know why my voice, my throat gets a little scratchy or something. So I'm coughing not because I'm sick, just because I'm speaking. So this time, the second time after Kali woke up even late, then her boss had angry words. And then, of course, you can imagine how the story goes. The maid does it for a third time. And this time, Mistress Videyaka, she grabbed a rolling pin and hit the maid on the head. And then the maid's head is bleeding. She has blood pulling out, and she runs out the side, and she goes to the neighbors and said, see what my boss did? See what Mistress Videyaka did? See what that even-tempered one? See what the calm one did?" So she was just showing that, you know, it's only people that have a certain way in which they showed up just because everything was just right, all the conditions was just right. So the Buddha used this as this story as a way of how to train so that you're not like Mistress Videyaka. That is, how to respond in a way that's appropriate without scowling or saying bad words or even violence, hitting somebody over the head with a rolling pin when things don't go the way that you want them to go. So these are the instructions that the Buddha gives to his monks. So he tells this story to his monks. So now he turns to his monks and he gives these instructions. "Abandon what is unwholesome and devote yourself to the wholesome." Okay, this makes sense, right? We know this, that to abandon what is unwholesome is a way in which we can have more ease in our lives and to have more steadiness and peace and freedom. But it's not so easy. It's interesting, this word, devote yourself to the wholesome. We can think of this as like engage in. The word is also, that's again translated as devotees, is also associated with connect yourself to, or yoke yourself to, or, you know, to be devoted to is to really be connected to. And then the Buddha continues with some more instructions. "You should train thus. my heart will not be warped. This word warped, think of it like we could also translate it as turned, or you know, sometimes we use this word perverted, like it gets twisted in a way that isn't what was meant. So not to maybe twisted is a right way. The same phrase, my heart will not be warped, could also be translated as my mind will not be affected. That could be another way to understand it. So you should train thus, my heart will not be warped, and I shall utter no malevolent words. I shall abide caring for others' welfare with a mind of goodwill, with no secret ill will. So again, the Buddha is saying, well, here's how to practice. But we might say, we need a little more guidance here. My heart will not be warped. Okay. But how can we do that? How can we increase our capacity? How can we show up? How can we be in the world in such a way that when difficulties arise, that we are not saying malevolent words, we're not scowling, we're not hitting people over the head with rolling pins? So here's this, some more stories that the Buddha gives that sheds a little bit of light on this. Again, these are teaching stories, so not so much that they're true, but maybe an invitation to see what they invoke or what they're pointing to. This is part of the Buddha's skill as a teacher, is to use maybe colorful language as a way to have us look at things afresh or to really engage with them. So here's the Buddha, he says, monks or monastics. Suppose a person came with a hoe and a basket and said, I shall make this great earth to be without earth. They would dig here and there and scatter the soil here and there and spit here and there and urinate here and there and yell, be without earth, be without earth. What do you think? Could that person make this great earth be without earth? No, venerable sir. Why not? Because this great earth is deep and immeasurable. So even though there are some person is yelling at the earth, the person is hitting it with a hoe, a basket, maybe moving things around, urinating and spitting, like doing things that are disrespectful, and maybe you might even think that are like in ancient India there was a real concern about purity, so these are things that were considered impure. And yet the earth, of course, is not bothered, because it is deep and immeasurable. Putting aside that the earth is not a person, but it's deep and immeasurable is what the Buddha is pointing to. And then this other story. So monks, suppose a person came with a blazing grass torch and said, I shall heat up and boil away the Ganges River with this blazing gas torch. Blazing grass torch. What do you think? Could that person heat up and boil away the river Ganges with this blazing grass torch? No, venerable sir. Why not? Because the Ganges River is deep and immeasurable. So again, pointing to things that have a depth. And we could also use, instead of this word immeasurable, we could use the word immense, really big, really broad. These things don't get affected by the difficulties that are happening. Even if somebody is trying to heat them up, trying to get a rise out of them in some way, like how the maid was trying to get a rise out of Mistress Vidyaka. So what does it mean to be deep and immense, or deep and immeasurable? So there's a few things that we could look at, or we can talk about. This idea of cultivating depth so that we're not thrown off our course, or thrown by when challenging situations arise, we don't find ourselves being blown one side and then the other, so that we don't spin out and start creating damaging stories or actions, or if we do, it's just for a short while. And to become immeasurable is, in the Pali Canon, in the early discourses, is associated with loving, having a mind and heart of loving kindness. That is to be radiating goodwill in all directions without end, immeasurable. So to be deep could be to have some mindfulness, some steadiness, and some wisdom. And to be immense and to be immeasurable, it would be to have some loving kindness, to have some goodwill. So I'd like to unpack these a little bit more. So mindfulness practice, of course we all know this, that helps us to have some steadiness. And part of the way in which it does that, I'm sure if you have a practice you've discovered, is it helps us to be more comfortable with being uncomfortable. It helps us to gain some confidence that when things aren't quite going right, it doesn't mean it's the end of the world, or, you know, catastrophe has struck and that we must go and fix things. To be sure, sometimes things need to be fixed, but with our mindfulness practice, we learned that it is possible to sit through the end of the meditation period, waiting for the bell or the timer, when it might be tremendous restlessness, this feeling that you want to jump up and bolt, this feeling that I just don't want to be doing this right now. And yet somehow we stay. Somehow we stay. It might just be by the skin of our teeth. But the more we do that, the greater our confidence is, and the more we have some resources to, I've done this before. And often what we discover is that there's a sweet spot on the other side. So not only does it, we learn that we don't have to white knuckle everything, but we learn that if we can relax into, allow, and be with the difficulty, it creates the conditions for something better to arise. As opposed to when we're always wrestling with it or shoving it away or trying to make it different. For me, that was a big learning. I used to have some uncomfortableness sitting. I remember the very first meditation retreat I ever went on. I thought it was amazing, the most amazing thing, that the person that was in sitting in front of me in the meditation hall sat still for the whole 45 minutes without changing her posture. Whereas for me, that I just didn't even know that was possible. I could not sit still for 45 minutes. I had to shift my posture and so incredibly restless. And of course, now I can. But this idea that I was seeing somebody else do it, and then like, okay, maybe I can relax into this. And then my confidence started to grow that, okay, yeah, it was a little bit uncomfortable. My foot was falling asleep. But that was okay. At the end of the, when the bell rang, the feeling came back in my foot. So mindfulness to be with our experience, to practice meditation in such a way that we can notice what's happening and allow it to be there. Notice what's happening and to notice our reaction to it, so that we're not pushing it away. And to be with such a way that we can gain some skill and some familiarity and some confidence. And part of one way to do this is to have some curiosity about what's happening. I find curiosity is a way in which it doesn't feel heavy-handed, it doesn't feel like it's something that a person has to do or should do. Instead, it has a playful quality to it. It has a, not like things have to be a particular way, but more an experimental, wow, what is this? What is it like to sit here with a foot that's tingling, falling asleep, and can I sit still with it? Or maybe to investigate, well, is it just one foot or is it both feet? Is it just my foot or is that part of the leg? I'm just using these as examples, but there are so many things that we could be curious about. Or this, we might be noticing some ill will that arises in the mind when we're meditating. Like, wow, okay, what does that feel like? Often we have our kind of emotions in the central axis of the body, not always, but often. So to have this sense of curiosity, what's that experience like? And this mindfulness and this curiosity can help us to find what's deep, as opposed to this sense of I have to find it, or everybody else has it, I don't have it, I don't even know what they're talking about. But this attitude of some openness and some attentiveness, coupled with some playfulness, some investigation, allows us to hold what's happening. And then with that, to be able to, either what's deep to be, to show itself, or as one way to word it, or maybe for it to be discovered, or maybe for it to become obvious, or to become known, with this sense of engagement, this sense of connecting with what's happening. Something else that can help us to discover what's deep, and I'm using this word deep to point to some stability or steadiness we might have, is also during our daily life, is to practice contentment. That is, just notice those moments when things seem okay, when they're neutral. Of course, there are so many of them, but we tend not to notice them. But to sometimes bring to mind or to bring to the heart, like, okay, right now, this very moment, things are okay. Things are okay. And this also allows something to relax and to settle. Things are okay. This very moment too. And with this settling, we can maybe touch into what's deep and steady, which of course can help us when difficulties arise. And of course we can bring in some wisdom. There's all kinds of things we could do with wisdom. I'll just mention one of them here. This recognition that we all have. There's a common phrase, this too shall pass. I just seeing the bigger picture can help us have some stability, some steadiness, to help put things into perspective. Yes, there's this what's happening right now, but to put in the context of our greater life or the greater community, whatever it might be. And then in the Buddha's teachings, he talked about the earth and the river were both deep and immense, immeasurable. So also pointing to the value of loving kindness practice or some compassion practice, some opening of the heart, some warmth of the heart. For those of you who know this, you can do this in a formal way. Or you can chant the Metta Sutta. Or also just do a gratitude practice. It's quite something at the end of the day to think of, okay, what am I grateful for? When I started this practice, I didn't realize how much I was touched by other people. And what I was grateful for often had to do with some conversations that I had or some connection with other people. And it is heartwarming, I think, for those of you who do have a gratitude practice. That is, at the end of the day, some people do this right before they go to sleep to think of three things that they're grateful for. Some people also do it when they wake up in the morning. Maybe it's three things, maybe it's five things. But this is to help us tap into our heart, into the heart of experience of being big, as opposed to small, of this concern of what I don't have, this relaxation, this openness of what I do have. What is going okay? And then when we, with the gratitude practice, also helps us feel like we have enough. And then when we have enough, of course, that's another way in which we can relax and open. So the Buddha gave the encouragement to practice this way. My heart will not be warped. I shall utter no malevolent words. I shall abide caring for their welfare with a mind of goodwill, with no secret ill will. And maybe one way to practice with that is also just to set the intention to do so. So some people have a recollection practice where they bring to mind particular things every day. We can set an intention. My heart will not be warped. Maybe we can understand that my heart will not be closed. I shall utter no malevolent words. Sorry. Can set an intention. My heart will not be warped. That is, not be closed. We could also translate that same sentence as my mind will not be affected, my steadiness of mind. I shall utter no malevolent words. I shall abide caring for their welfare with a mind, with a heart of goodwill, with no secret ill will. So that when difficulties arise, we don't find ourselves doing things that we later regret, like hitting somebody over the head with a rolling pin. So may our practice together today, this evening, may whatever benefit is from our practicing together and thinking about how we might show up in the world and how we might create some steadiness, some depth, some immenseness in our experience so that we can help support others during difficult times. Thank you.